It does work like magic, because what it does is it plants a seed in our brain of what we want. And then every decision we make, we start to have a filter of, will that get me to the top 30 cities? Will this get us on Oprah? And we make the right decisions and the magic happens.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoy this episode with Brian Scudamore, founder and CEO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Today, we're discussing how a $700 investment turned into a $700 million a year empire. Why Brian fired his entire staff and started over after 5 years in business. How he used the 4-H process to select franchise partners, and the guarantee that makes WOW One Day Painting a low-risk investment. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
We've had several founders, Brian, come on and talk about their college businesses, right? That was usually kind of their foray into entrepreneurship. It was a little side gig. It helped, you know, it was good beer money for the weekends, maybe paid their way through college, and then they went on to do other things. In your case, the college business ended up becoming a $700 million juggernaut, 100 plus corporate employees, 2,500 vehicles across three countries. So just incredible what you have accomplished. I want you to take us back to your humble beginnings. You're sitting in the drive-thru at McDonald's and you see this beautiful, or maybe not so beautiful, junk truck.
Not so beautiful. Yeah, I was in Vancouver trying to figure out how was I going to pay for college. All my friends were going to college. My parents were not going to fund my college education if I couldn't even finish high school, which was fair. And there I was, a McDonald's drive-thru, saw this beat-up old pickup truck. It had plywood sides on the box and it was heaped over with junk. And I looked at that and I was like, that's a good idea. I should start to haul junk as a way to pay for college. It was a tight summer job market at that time in 1989. And this became just like gold for me. It taught me how to run a business. It paid for my education. And ironically, 3 years into my college education, I made a bold decision to drop out. I was learning more about business by running a business more than I was studying in school. So I sat down with my dad, who has done higher learning at a level that most people would never imagine. He's a liver transplant surgeon. And I said, Dad, I got some good news for you. I'm leaving college. I'm going to pursue my business full time. And he said, Bri, how is that good news? And I said, it's great news because I'm just learning so much running a business, way more than my professors could ever teach me. And he certainly did not buy into my new path. And about 15 years later, he's like, okay, you made the right decision, something solid, and got a great team.
Where was the business at that point when your dad decided that you made the right decision?
Yeah, so let's see, when I dropped out, we were at about $100,000 in revenue. When my dad actually validated and said, okay, Bri, you're doing some great stuff, we were probably 50 million.
Even the Shark Tank would validate you at a million. It's like, man, good for you.
My dad was worried. He values education. Yeah. And clearly, if you want to become a doctor, you need a good degree. If you want to become an entrepreneur, the best way to learn is by doing. I would have gladly stayed in school if there was a program that would have served my educational needs. Didn't exist at the time. And even today, I still believe that entrepreneurs learn the best outside of school. You know, here's a great example. We had a Harvard business case study that was written about us years ago. And I was invited to Harvard to go show up and surprise the classes and say, hey, you know, I'm the guy in the case study. What would you do? And it was interesting that they all made the wrong decisions, or 80% of the class, Harvard MBAs, took the path that didn't work out, is what they believed. And I thought, you know, entrepreneurs have a different sense of intuition and what makes sense because they don't have an MBA. They're just learning on the street, so to speak. And that proved to be much more valuable to me.
It's true. In your book, you even mentioned you were called in to speak and you're like, wait a minute, if I'm teaching the class, I'm in the wrong place. I need to surround myself with people smarter than me. You became the smartest guy in the room, even relative to the professor. It's time to move on. The book, by the way, was great. It's a quick read, but it's excellent.
I wrote it for business owners to read. And what do we know about business owners? They're busy. They're often ADD. They've got a stack of books at the bedside table. My co-author, Roy H. Williams, said, do we want people to read this or do we want it sitting on their bedside? And I said, no, of course, read it. He said, okay, we're going to keep it a little shorter. And it's a 90-minute read. And it worked. It's
excellent. And it appeals to someone like me.
How many times does someone read a book, though, and say, it's great, probably could have been done in 80, 90 pages, right, to get what you really need out of it? So the short, like, let's get short and to the point, keep it condensed is the way to go.
The other thing I like about the book is, and I want to touch on some of these points for you to elaborate on, everyone thinks that you need a ton of money, right? You just have to have a ton of money and you need to be some, you know, Jack Welch CEO. What I love about you and your journey, and these are your words, not mine, you are as ordinary as it gets, right? You're an ordinary, just a regular guy. I mean, that makes you just so not only relatable, but inspiring to every just regular guy. You started a nearly billion-dollar enterprise with a $700 Ford pickup truck, and that is just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, regular. Well, I'm a big believer, Cliff, that people, they overcapitalize in the beginning. And an entrepreneur who doesn't yet have his or her chops overcapitalizing, the worst thing you can do. What do? You end up burning money so quickly, making mistakes. Because what do? The title of my book is Willing to Fail. We make mistakes and that's okay. That's how we learn. But if you start with too much capital, you make expensive mistakes and you think that, oh, money can just buy solving that problem. So I look at some of the people out there in the world that have started some of the biggest businesses out there today. What's one of the biggest? Apple. Started with $1,000 out of a basement. Steve Wozniak, Steve Jobs. You look at Amazon, they bootstrapped. You know, Bezos had a wooden door that he used as a table, as a desk to save costs. And I think it's important to get out there and realize that you can start a business with little amount of money, but it's not that you, my belief is not just that you can, it's that you should. Don't leverage yourself in the beginning until you've proven your idea and proven yourself. When we get franchise partners that get out there and start a business, the first year and a half, we want them focused on understanding every aspect of our business, whether it's junk removal with 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Wow One Day Painting in our painting space, or Shack Shine, windows, gutters, power washing. They need to get on the tools, not because we want them to stay there, but to master what is it like to be out in the field and teach someone else and have the leadership to say, I've walked a mile in that person's shoes. I understand what it's like to be a technician or a junk remover. So starting small is a good thing. If someone wants to grow a big business, and yes, we'll hit a billion, we'll hit 2 billion one day. To grow a large business, you've got to start small and be careful and be prudent with how you spend your early day money.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710. Or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you. We just saw it happen in Silicon Valley during this zero interest rate environment. Look at all these companies with the yoga studios, the cafes, everyone gets free food, free drinks, parties at night, right? And then all of a sudden that goes away because it's just wasteful. Right? Like, we need to button things up.
Yeah.
So true. Work.
Yeah. Our largest franchise partner, or one of the largest in our system, in 1-800-GOT-JUNK, he's got over $100 million in revenue across all his franchises. He started with $25,000 in debt. He had an old Honda Accord, and I remember the window in the back, someone broke into his car. He couldn't afford to even repair that window. And so here's a guy that bootstrapped from absolutely less than nothing, borrowed $25,000 from his brother, and grew it slowly, but worked it. He did $1 million in revenue in his first full year, and today over $100 million. So these success stories, A, they take a long time. They're not overnight like many people dream of, but it takes that tenacity, that hard work, and being vulnerable, not sitting there, you know, being the smart, you talked about it earlier, Cliff, being the smartest person in the room. I never feel like I'm the smartest person in the room. And I think the most successful entrepreneurs are those who can put themselves in rooms surrounded by way smarter people. That's how we learn. That's how we grow.
That's yours. You have a lot of secret weapons. I know you call yourself an ordinary guy, but you're a super visionary. You're very good with people. But I do love the fact how humble you are, and you do know your limitations. Like, you hired key people in key leadership roles where you knew and your franchisees knew, like the firing of the Starbucks exec, like, I'm not the guy. Like, you recognize that very early. We work with a lot of people in franchising that are not the right leader, and they stay there because I'm the founder. You're that founder that knows his limitations. I think that's genius. I really do.
Well, I think everything is a team sport, you know, in business. And you've got to have someone that complements your efforts. The two of you are here today doing this together as a team. We just met, but I bet between Cliff and Justin, there's a lot of different experiences and talents that you both bring to the table. You mentioned Justin loves to read big, long books. Cliff will read a few short ones, right? But you bring different energy and enthusiasm, different skill set and experiences to the table. I think if an entrepreneur, founder, franchise owner can get out of their own way as quickly as possible, not too quick, but quickly enough that they go, okay, now I understand the business. I've got a vision. Who do I need to come in and help me? Is it with the finances? Is it with the operations? We find a lot of franchise partners, if you put them on the spectrum of operations and sales, they're generally really, really good at either one of them. If you're a strong salesperson, bring on an operational leader. If you're a strong operator, bring on a sales guy. And it's hard to do because people will often say, but I don't know how to bring on a good salesperson. You know, go network off of great salespeople that you know and say, what makes a great salesperson, and get them to introduce you to someone.
Justin, in the book, there's a Jack Prescott story. And we are faced with this question on a weekly basis. Should I get a business partner? And one of the things he talks about is, do you need a partner or do you need a mentor? And he has this analogy you want to share it about being lost in the woods. And the story is, do you want to be lost in the woods with a companion, or do you want to be lost in the woods with someone that'll get you, guide you to safety? That is brilliantly worded. And so true. And I think a lot of people will benefit from that story anecdotally because it's true.
So I was living in Montreal, going to school. I came back to Vancouver to run my business for the summer. And I brought a buddy of mine, Jack, from Montreal. And I said, let's go build this together. And he had all the energy and ambition in the world, but he couldn't execute. He couldn't focus. In fact, he met a girl that summer. He wanted to spend more time with her in the winter skiing rather than running the business. And that was okay. But I said, you know, I've gotten into partnership 50-50 with someone who isn't in this for the long haul, and had to make a decision and get him out. And, you know, looking back, I'm 54 years old. So, you know, you say I've got a lot of gifts and talents. I think a lot of it is really just wisdom over time. But I'm able to look back at that situation and go, okay, Jack was a good guy. But what did I really need to grow that business? I needed to hire someone who was smarter than Jack, who was more talented than Jack. I didn't need a partner. And what I needed at the time was to find mentors. And I've got something, as someone who didn't finish university, I created my own MBA, which stands for Mentor Board of Advisors. I've got hundreds of mentors, and I'll pick up the phone and go, who's the smartest person in the world at something? And I'll just ask for help. And before anyone ever knew who I was or who my company was, I would pick up the phone and I'd talk to Fred DeLuca, who was the founder of Subway, Howard Schultz from Starbucks. I really was like, who is the smartest person in this area and I need some help? That's where I believe a mentor is way more valuable. You've got that old man or woman in the woods who's able to guide you, much more impactfully than someone who's just an energetic friend working by your side.
That's wild.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier that franchisee number one does $1 million in revenue in his first year. He's now the top producer, it sounds like, in the system at $100 million in revenue. It took you 8 years to get to $1 million. Mm-hmm. So one, I just want to highlight the power of collapsing time in franchising. Like once you figured out that model, it just kind of clicks and now the franchisees just have to execute. I also want to touch on your four H's.
Sure.
Because one of them is being hands-on. And I think it's important to mention this because there's so many people that we talk to every day who are uncomfortable cutting the ties to corporate America. Just, it's hard. It's not easy to walk away from $150,000, $250,000 paycheck.
Sure.
But sometimes people are so nearsighted. What they're missing is the opportunity to build a multi-million dollar enterprise with all of this leverage that could be sold at, I've heard you mention, one-time sales. I mean, that's real wealth creation that a job could never provide anyone.
If you think of the fact that at one time's revenue, sometimes more, someone like Paul Guy in Toronto, one would guess then that his group of businesses are worth $100 million. I mean, that is serious money for someone to take that, sell it off, and what they've built as a franchise owner. He was my first franchise partner. We've got others that are actually on track to surpass his revenue growth now. But what it is, I think it comes down to the formula. You talked about four H's. We look for these four things in every single candidate we bring into our franchise organization. Happy, hungry, hardworking, and hands-on. So happy, they've got to have a glass half full attitude. We don't want people complaining and being victims. When Tom Ritma came into our business in San Francisco and started a 1-800-GOT-JUNK franchise, we didn't have much in the way of systems. And Tom said to me, listen, I love the business. I'm a great sales guy. You don't have all the systems. I'm going to make this successful despite that fact. I'm going to help you create the systems. And he did. You need someone that comes from corporate America that goes, yeah, I got, you know, we don't want someone that has a big settlement and severance package and they've got a $500,000 or $1 million and they don't need this to work. We need someone who's hungry, who says, I will make this work at all costs. They've got to be willing to put in the hard work. They've got to be willing to get on there and get hands-on on the tools to understand the business, not just lead and delegate from day one. They've got to really be able to be out there and go, hey, I've done this business. I've mastered it. I know it. Now I'm finding nothing but great people to help me scale quickly. So it's a formula that works for us. And anytime we brought in someone that's missing one of those areas, like we've had a lot of really smart, talented, successful people that have come to us that have already made their money and they're not hungry, they haven't been successful with us because it just doesn't matter. When they need to get through the hard times, they don't have the
It's time. Too easy to walk away when things get difficult.
Yeah. And then yeah. Justin, you mentioned about, you know, corporate America and severing ties. Where we've seen almost exclusively people fail is when they're still working that corporate job, but trying to run one of our franchises at the same time. You half-ass everything. It just doesn't work. You got to go all in and say, I am committed to this business. I'm no longer working for FedEx or whatever your big corporate juggernaut is. I'm all in on Wow One Day Painting and let's go. Because that's the entrepreneurial roller coaster. But people get through it. And when you can get through those storms and get to the other side, you're like, oh, so grateful I'm an entrepreneur. I'm so grateful I went through the ups and the downs to get to where I am today.
Speaking of employees, and I've never heard anyone terminate like their entire organization in a day. Talk about where you decided, I have to cut these people loose. I failed them. What's yeah. this story about the employee termination?
Yeah, so you nailed it. It was a failure on my part. And thankfully, I recognized that this was me. I wasn't blaming the people that I was about to let go. I was blaming no one else but myself. So I had 11 employees, and they say one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. I had two that were maybe salvageable, but I wasn't 100% sure. So I sat down my entire team, my whole company, brought in all 11 people and said, guys, I'm sorry. I have to let you go. I've failed you as a leader. you haven't believed in me. I didn't believe in you. I made some mistakes here, and I see the only way out is to start again. It was my leadership as a young entrepreneur at 25 years old. I didn't know what I was doing. But what I understood that day, and it probably took me months to really get it as I rebuilt the business, it's all about people, finding the right people and treating them right. So I had to find people that believed in me, believed in our vision, saw this as bigger than just a job. When we set a goal to be in the top 30 metros in North America, we said we would be on the Oprah Winfrey Show. We said we'd be the FedEx of junk removal. I needed to recruit employees, people that said, I don't know how we're going to get there, but I want to be a part of it. And they did. And those people were the ones that some of them are still with us today. Drive a business forward through vision, find the right people, treat them right, and put the systems in place to continue to scale.
That is it. And there was a great quote in there where one great employee is worth three good employees. Just hire greatness, hire people that fit your culture, right? If you don't fit this culture, you can't be here.
Brian, what's the beer and barbecue test?
Yeah, beer and barbecue test is when we are looking for new people in terms of finding the right people, we do something that is a bit of a proverbial test. Ask yourself the question after interviewing someone, would you have a beer with this person or a coffee, whatever it is? Do you find this person interesting and interested? Do you have a shared common passion? Do you hit it off and connect in some way? Like, would the three of us have a beer together? From my side, absolutely. There's something that you can tell we're passionate about entrepreneurship. You guys have a fire in your eyes. You know, like, we're all excited here. Finding people and employees, it's too easy to go through the interview process and go through the list and tell me about a time you did this and what was the best employee you ever had and why and all these theoretical questions. Instead, we like to get to know someone and find out what makes them tick. Why do they want to join our business? And really dive deep into that and get to know them like a friend. The barbecue test then is us asking ourselves after an interview, how would someone fit in the greater culture? Do they bring a diverse opinion and set of beliefs? Will they challenge the group? Will they have fun? Are they introverted, extroverted? What's different, unique about them, but do they just fit? It's like a good house party. You know, you walk into a house party and they're not all great ones, but one just feels different. It's because of the vibe that is there, the energy from the entire group. For us, we feel it's like a great house party, and it just, they have to add to what we're building together. It really drives me nuts when people out there interview and they just spend so much time on questions that aren't going to matter versus really getting to know someone. So we hire first on attitude and train on skill. If we're looking for a CFO, a chief financial officer, someone's got to validate their skills with numbers and accounting principles and so on. But what we're really looking for is culture first.
And you're right. And you nailed it. It's paying off. You went from doing $1 million a year to $2 million a day. Think about that. It's like mind blowing to me. It took you 8 years to get to $1 million a year. And now you're doing $2 million a day. It just blows my mind. You actually remind me, I worked with Fred DeLuca at a private equity firm. You remind me a lot of Fred DeLuca. You're as humble as him. You're as hands-on as him. And he was also very modest. He didn't let the wealth change him. He flew coach and he drove an Acura. I heard you drive like a Ford or something, right?
Yeah, no, I drove my Ford F-150, my pickup. It's funny, I remember the days when Fred and I used to talk on the phone and he'd say, and he was a great mentor.
I bet.
He would reach out to me and say, hey, Brian, I got a meeting coming up. Call me on my car phone, back in the days when they used to call it that, at this time. I'd call him and, hey, Brian, how's it going? And we'd talk through stuff. And I'm like, this guy's a multi-billionaire who at the time was driving an 11-year-old Lincoln or something. Right. Like, I mean, it's true. He did not spend money. He told me a story of he bought a yacht in Florida. I think it was like a 125-foot yacht. And he was complaining about it. He's like, the stupidest thing I ever did. Do you know how expensive those things are to maintain? Do you know how hard it is to park? Like, he had a list of things. It's making his life complicated, not better.
Love this guy. It's great. He flew into New York one time with a brand that we were with. And his attorney wanted to warn us that he has a thing that he does where he'll say, you guys want to go eat? And when we get there, it'd be like, oh man, I left my wallet in the hotel. And sure as shit, we end up going to the restaurant with Evan Kaplan, Justin. And he goes, oh, I left my wallet in the car. And everybody laughed, goes like, the jig is up. Wait, this guy.
Poor Evan.
He was multi-billionaire, but frugal, flew coat, right? You can't change who you are. Who are we? What do we represent? Let's be us. And who do we want to be? I think that's fantastic.
Well, Cliff, you know, like the flying coach, so I fly coach as well. Now, will I fly business class if my wife and I are doing a romantic trip to Paris as a treat? Of course. But when I fly business, I fly coach. And for me, it's people watch. When you're a leader, they watch every single thing you do. Do you want to spend that kind of money when you're, you know, still in growth mode? I think it's important for people to understand that, like, if you are just a guy and you're normal, just like everybody else, then your actions better follow suit. And so it's important. We've got a culture here that is real. And it's important for people to see your actions and go, yeah, I can relate. There's no special treatment for the CEO and the president and all these extra people, right?
Yeah. And if you show that you're responsible and respect the budget and the spend, your employees will as well. What's important to you becomes important to them. Exactly.
Yeah, the franchisees see it too. Where are my royalties going? They're going to his private jet. They're going to his Rolls Royce. They're going to his, you know, Lake Cuomo home. Speaking of cabins, tell us about when you went. We're very big on visualization, by the way. We're big on law of attraction. We're big on what you think about, you bring about, and visualizing. You have a story where you went to the family cabin, basically locked yourself in there, visualizing. Tell us that story about Gerber, the E-Myth, the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I sat down and, you know, so the Gerber side of it is, you know, I read a book called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Michael Gerber and I have known each other for years now and become great friends. And Michael Gerber was someone who inspired me for someone who wasn't a great reader. I picked up this book that a mentor told me I needed to read. And it basically said this: build your business out like a franchise, even if you don't anticipate you'll franchise, because your level of success is much higher if you've got the systems and the organization that franchises have. So my business started to look and feel so much like a franchise that I then got out there and realized maybe that is the route that I want to go, build a franchise. So I go, okay, what does a franchise organization look like? I needed a vision, something really clear of how big, what it could look like, what it could feel like. And I went to my parents' cabin. They had this little cabin on the water, and it was a beautiful little spot that I get out on the dock and I take out a sheet of paper because I felt like I was in a bit of a doom loop. I felt like I was comparing myself with other entrepreneurs that surrounded me. I felt like I was just really struggling with, can I truly build this business? It's the junk removal business. It's not glamorous. And then I said, okay, listen, I'm going to stop thinking about the doom and gloom, and I'm going to think about all the optimistic, positive stuff that could be. And I started writing down what the business would look like, feel like, and act like at a point in the future, 5 years down the road. We'd be in the top 30 cities. At the time, we were only in one in North America. We'd be in the top 30 biggest cities. We'd be on the Oprah Winfrey show, because wow, could you imagine if she talked about 1-800-GOT-JUNK, clean, shiny trucks, friendly, uniform drivers, and so on. And that was a five-year vision that document, that painted picture, was used to sit down with future employees, with current employees, with franchise partners once we got there to say, this is where we're going. Do you see what we see? Do you want to be a part of the destination that we're headed towards? And it worked like magic. And I know both of you said that you're big into seeing, believing, getting out there and achieving what you see. It does work like magic, because what it does is it plants a seed in our brain of what we want and generally why it's important. And then every decision we make, we start to have a filter of, will that get me to the top 30 cities? Will this get us on Oprah? And we make the right decisions and the magic happens.
What you think about, you bring about.
So true.
Brian, I heard you mention once that your 19-year-old self would be surprised at what you've accomplished given your lack of confidence throughout most of your life. You know, never finished high school, never finished college. And you not only built this massive company, but you've really been the face of the company. And you know, Oprah, Ellen, right? I mean, you're out there. Is that how this all happened? Is it just a mindset shift?
It's a mindset shift. I mean, I talk in my book about I was the kid with braces and buck teeth and didn't have a lot of friends. I was always pushing people's buttons, not in a good way. And it took some time to grow up. As an entrepreneur, especially, I was like, I don't have the confidence, but I learned by doing. And the more success I had, the more it helped to prop me up. And having mentors and people that believed in me or saw something in me. Fred DeLuca. Fred DeLuca came to Vancouver to our head office, The Junction, when he was going on a cruise up to Alaska with his wife. He took the time to stop in, a multi-billionaire, to just say hello because he believed in me. And he used to tell me how much he believed in me. So confidence, it comes from doing and getting great results. It also comes from surrounding yourself with people that believe in you, a good coach who can prop you up. And then once I started to believe in myself, I believed in my strengths. You know, there's lots of things. We talked about this already, where areas where I'm not the smartest guy in the room by far, but I'll make sure we've got a smart person to put into that room to help guide us.
You must miss him. It's a tragedy what happened at Fred, right?
Yeah, a brilliant man, a lot of passion, and I learned so much from him. And, you know, I think that I talk about him often, and I've got so many great mentors that I'm blessed enough to be able to talk about. But you just get some things from certain people that you'd never get from anyone else. And his connection to the being someone, again, having multi-billion dollars in sales, yet he had just a belief in some crazy possibilities. Like the story of him and Dr. Peter Buck, 50-50 partner. And the day where they go, hey, Peter calls up, how are your sales? Well, we sold $6 in sandwiches today. What? What are you going to do about that? He goes, we're going to open a second store, says Fred. Peter's like, what are you talking about? You're out of your tree. He goes, well, we're not going to get to our goal of 32 stores if we don't add a second. So let's go. To Fred, it made absolute sense. And for everybody, it paid off.
Right. It was Pete Subs or Pete Submarines in the beginning, right?
Pete Submarines. Yeah.
Yeah. Submarines, similar to you. Yeah. You did the same thing. He did Subways in college. You did this in college. You went through the name change. What were you again?
We were the Rubbish Boys.
Right. Yeah. The 738 junk. Right.
Exactly. And when you realize something that's working but isn't working well enough, the Rubbish Boys was working, but it wasn't the right name to go in the United States with. There were all sorts of challenges. But Fred, with Pete Submarines on radio, it sounded like he was saying Pizza Marines. And people were confused. They're like, what's this Pizza Marines business? And so smart enough to go, there's a little thing there that we've got to change. And he changed
it. Interesting. I like a comment you made about, I have three businesses and three kids. Selling this business is like selling one of my kids. How many times are you approached for a buyout? Is this a weekly, daily thing where someone just wants to acquire you?
Are you talking now about my kids or businesses? Because sometimes I have a teenager. There's a teenager from time to time in the family that you can have him or her. You know what? I'm approached constantly to the point that I've actually got a filter in my email that when the word private equity shows up, it just deletes. So I used to reply to every single email anyone would send me. And then I got to a point where I'm like, with private equity, you reply, they then, even if you say you're not interested, starts an engagement of, well, we're gonna be in town, let's do dinner, how about this? Right. It takes too much time and energy. So it's easier for me in that situation, just, you know, respectfully, it's maybe not the best way, but it works for me because there's just too many. And I can't look at them. I mean, for anyone that has kids, you can appreciate that even in tough times, you love them. You love watching them grow. And so do we send kids off to college and let them fly the coop and do their own thing? Absolutely. With a business, I would never sell a business before it was ready to, before we had done everything we believed we could do with it. I just love the businesses and continue to learn. And the three of them all have so much potential to be the dominant player in each one of their spaces that even when things get tough and you get some people here in the company going, one day shine in the early days, we've had some struggles. Maybe it's time. We're going to light the world up.
Right. Brian, I want to mention the WOW guarantee. I mean, for anyone out there who's interested in buying one of the O2E brands franchises. Again, it's 1-800-GOT-JUNK, WOW One Day Painting, and Shack Shine. I don't know if it was last year or 2022 when rates started spiking. We were expecting the economy to slow. And I put a message out on LinkedIn. Are there any franchisors out there who are putting skin in the game and offering any type of a guarantee?
Right.
And only one brand raised their hand. One of the guys from your development team responded and said, yeah, we have a great guarantee at Wow One Day Painting. First of all, it's a franchise fee payment plan. I mean, just that is more than 95% of the brands out there are doing. Franchisee puts down $20,000. They don't make any payments for the first year, and they pay off the balance in 4 years with no interest. Incredible. Okay. On top of that, if the franchisee doesn't hit a preset revenue threshold in their first year of business, they can walk away from the franchise agreement and get their $20,000 back.
Yeah.
So we put this guarantee, Brian, in an email that goes out to every single prospect that comes into our system. And like, no, think, who's not going to want this, right? It's like everybody, like, we're all about risk mitigation, right? And it's like, okay, everybody wants the franchisor to lean in. Here you go. I would think any, especially with a brand like Wow, which is an incredible brand, and O2E brands, I'm just shocked that like people aren't taking advantage of this. Like, maybe they are, just not with us.
Well, we did it in the early days of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and it was very effective. And the whole reason we guaranteed we'd give you your franchise feedback is if it doesn't work for you, it's not working for us, and vice versa. We want people, if they set their revenue goal and we go, hey, listen, you're going to do everything in your power to hit it, and they don't hit it, we give them the option to walk away because they're not happy. We're not going to be happy. It's a win-win. It's like my, you know, an old friend who's since passed on, Tony Shea, who started Zappos. He used to pay people $4,000 after training as employees, $4,000 to leave. If you don't like what you see here in the company and you're not the right fit, here, take this money now and go, run. Because he didn't want people that didn't believe in the long term and were going to stick it out. The guarantees worked for us.
Is it still working?
Have you given money back?
Yeah, I just heard of a case the other day, and the guy, it was exactly what you had talked about earlier, leaving corporate America. He realized he'd made a mistake. He goes, you know what? I'm not an entrepreneur. I need to go back to corporate America. What a perfect thing. We give him his money back. He goes back to corporate America, and that's both right. Happy.
Resell the territory to someone that's going to lean in and do the H's, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Very smart. Made a lot of smart moves.
Well, thank you for having me. I've done, 200, maybe 300 podcasts in my life, and this one stands out. You guys have a really great energy. The preparation you've done is unbelievable.
Thank you, Bryce.
And just was excited to be here. You guys made it a lot of fun.
It means a lot coming from you. Yeah, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, you're an inspiration to us all. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you.